Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, June 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us for our gardening program today, horticulturalist Bob Graves, co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. We welcome your gardening questions right now at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. I often say this, but I am not engaging in any hyperbole here. It's a popular program, and if you wait too long, you'll be shut out of the show. So call now, 800-348-2551, or you can email the show at voxpop@wamc.org. It's The Gardening Show. We'll be back and kick it off after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. It's The Gardening Show today, and joining us, it's the Dream Team. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He has been a gardener for decades, and I didn't say how many.
Tell by the color of my hair. Yeah.
And he's mowed lawns for a long time as well. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Fred, Bob, and Greg, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Thanks for having us.
We welcome your calls at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get to as many emails as we can. It's just like the phone calls. If you're in too late, you miss the party. But do it now if you so desire. And we were just talking, reminiscing wistfully about our days mowing lawns as as children. And not so many kids mow lawns anymore.
Not so many, no. It seemed like, well.
What happened to America?
Many, many years ago, everybody mowed lawns.
Right? Yeah. And it's still a lot of fun.
Well, right? You know, the minimum wage went up.
Oh. And, not in my house. Well, anything new we want to talk about gardening-wise before we get to the phones?
You know, I would say it's a good time of year to do selective pruning. I've been getting a lot of calls on that. You know, when's a good time to prune, especially a lot of ornamentals. But a lot of people think, oh, dormant season, everything's cold. But at middle of summer is a good time, starting right now through all of July, selective pruning on many ornamentals, especially a lot of the bleeder species like maples and birches. This is prime time, so yeah. Never more than 30% of the foliage off at one session. But if you haven't been out there pruning yet, this is an excellent time to get out there.
And then a little bit, I got a call this morning about transplanting, a small evergreen, and with the weather pattern we've been having, cool weather, everything has grown once, it stopped, it should be setting a bud, a little bud, and if this is a small plant, you could actually, doesn't have to be an evergreen, you could move it, a woody plant right now, if you're careful.
Particularly if you pick your
water.
Day.
Yes.
Pick it when it's a little bit cooler rather than a little bit hotter.
Cloudy.
Yeah. Yep. We're seeing a tremendous amount of fungus problems in lawns. There's a lot of red thread out there. There's powdery mildew on a lot of shrubs, and a lot of these things are not a disaster. They're just there because it's been so awfully wet. You can treat for some of it, and some of it will go away on its own, and some of it can be managed organically. But don't panic if you see a lot of fungus disease out there because it's
then,
the weather.
And then seeding in your vegetable garden. You know, people say, well, I'd like to, you know, get some broccoli going or some carrots or some beets. All that can happen, again, if you missed it the first time, beans. If you missed it the first time, we're into the second batch.
Oh, because none of ours have come up yet.
Well, there you go. You should start over.
There you go. Plenty of opportunity.
We might be doing something wrong. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. And Carl in Greene County is first. Carl, you're on.
Oh, thank you, Ray. It's a pleasure to hear your voice.
Thank you.
I always listen to you.
Well, I appreciate it.
And I'm not even a Democrat. I have a question. I had one of these little roses you buy for $3 or $4 in the grocery store, and after it stopped blooming in the house, I planted it outside, but I basically just threw it in the ground. Now, it planted it at the base of a holly bush, which is about 7 feet tall, and right now the roses are about 8 feet tall, and I have over 300 blooms on it.
Wow.
And I just wonder, is this unusual, and how do I transplant it, and when?
Well, the 8 foot tall aspect does seem unusual to me, but all of those roses you get in a potted plant at the garden center or this grocery store are usually pretty hardy. They actually work out pretty well. If you're thinking of transplanting it, moving it to another location, roses, that one will repeat bloom. It's in a full bloom now. Let that pass. At that time, you could actually cut it back very hard. This is where the 30% rule does not apply. You can actually cut it in half or even smaller. And then move it, keep it well watered. It will regrow and probably bloom in August.
Really?
Yep.
So as soon as it's done blooming now, I can chop it down and replant it.
Exactly.
All right.
Very interesting. Thank you very much.
Hey, Carl, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the telephone number, here on Vox Pop, the gardening show with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward. Let's go to, is it Dre or Drea in Troy?
Drea.
Drea, you're on.
Hi. I have a magnolia tree, and I'm not getting any flowers on it. Every year I give it a dressing of acid-loving fertilizer. There are beautiful leaves. The branches are, full, and the tree looks pretty healthy, but I don't get flowers on it. So what could be the cause of that?
Is it in full sun? In a lot of sun?
Excuse me. At this time of year, it gets pretty good sun. It doesn't get great sun in the winter.
Well, the winter doesn't count.
I'm sorry?
The winter doesn't count. We don't really care about the winter, but
okay.
A lot of times, if things aren't blooming, one of the first things you question is whether there's enough sun for it.
Yep, lilacs are famous for that.
Lilacs,
too.
Particularly, yeah, they'll grow, but they won't bloom. Yep. Magnolias will take some shade, and sometimes that line is very fine between when it's enough sun and when it isn't. So it may just not be getting quite enough.
Yeah, another option would be that sometimes the flower buds are what we call more marginal in terms of their hardiness. And the foliage buds are typically hardier. So sometimes in the winter, spring, I should say, you'll get those cold snaps, and it'll often damage those flower buds, but it won't damage the foliage foliage buds, and then those will...
What color were those flowers?
That's what I was going to ask her next.
Do you remember?
If they're yellow, the cultivar is butterflies.
Butterflies.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
So that one is a little bit temperamental with some of those like late cold snaps that we get, like in that early spring, late winter. That could be.
It actually, what we find is it doesn't like to set a flower anytime soon.
Gets older.
Well, yeah, they need to have been in the ground for several years. Probably, I would say 3 to 5 years.
Huh. How old is the one you have?
See one.
It's been in the ground about 4 years, and the first year that I planted, the first spring after the summer that I planted it, I had beautiful flowers.
Yeah.
And so that was probably left over from whatever was happening in the nursery
Another thing we find with flowering plants is when you first plant them, sometimes the conditions are so good that they spend all their time putting out foliar growth. And sometimes a plant will bloom better if it's under a little bit of stress. That's why it bloomed when you first planted it, because it had been stressed in the transplanting.
Mm-hmm. About that.
So sometimes if you scare it a little bit and you root prune it and you put it under just a little bit of stress and it thinks it's going to, it needs to go to seed in an evolutionary sense to preserve the species, it'll flower better.
Right.
I'll
be darned. Yeah, you'll see that with like wisteria around here. That's really common with wisteria.
Yeah. So scare them.
So how do I stress out a magnolia?
How do you frighten the magnolia?
Just take it to work with you.
A little root pruning
is the way to go. You use a spade,
like
a straight edge shovel that has a relatively sharp edge on it, and you're going to stick that in the ground kind of around the,
around
the drip
line.
Almost
like in a dotted fashion, a dotted circle around the base.
Yep.
Not
a continuous circle.
Right.
Okay.
No, because you don't want to sever all the roots. You kind of just stick it in and then pull it back out, and then you cut another section and pull it back out. You don't want to pry the plant up because you're not trying to dig it up. All you're doing is cutting the roots, pulling the straight shovel.
And
right,
you said around the drip line?
Yeah, I would say around the drip line of the tree.
All right, Drea, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Well, let's squeeze another call in before the first break. Edie in Slingerlands. Edie, you're on.
Hi. I don't know whether or not you can answer this, so I have to pose this question to the science show.
Okay.
But when I dig in my garden, and I come across worms, I just flick them away. But it occurred to me, I wonder if they're worm families. I don't know anything about worms, and I looked it up on the internet, and it doesn't say anything about worm families.
What is the family structure of the worm? Let's find out.
I have no idea, but when I'm in the garden digging, I only come across one worm here or there. I don't ever see a worm home. I don't think that they're communal.
Now, worms are good for the soil,
they are.
Right?
Yeah, I'm not sure why we're throwing them out of the garden.
Yeah.
I'm not throwing them out. I'm just throwing them to a different part.
Oh,
I'm just worried that I'm separating families.
No, I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, I tend to think they're probably more solo.
Yep.
Well, that's a very great question,
good
Edie.
Question.
Thanks a lot. That's interesting. Is there a big thought process with worms?
So in my vegetable garden, we have a bluebird house, and we've now had consistent occupation of the bluebird house, and they love it when I'm in the garden and I flick a worm.
Oh, yeah.
They are just on that.
They're ready for that?
Seconds. Yes.
That's exciting. Nature in action. All right, let's take a break here. Fred Breglia and Bob Graves is here, and Greg Ward, and yours truly, Ray Graff. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring an assortment of perennials, annuals, trees, and shrubs. June is Perennial Plant Month, Monday through Sunday, 8 to 5, a gardener's destination. StoriesNursery.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers. Nature.org/Adirondacks. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5. HydeCollection.org. Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement at educational seminars across central New York. Say no to kneepain.com for dates and locations. And Poughkeepsie Farm Project, working to connect food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares now available for the 2017 season. FarmProject.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you at 800-348-2551. And it's the gardening show today. Fred Breglia, Bob Ward, and Greg Ward and Bob Graves are here. And anything going on that we need to know about at the respective shops?
I was just going to say that, you know, I come from a family of seven. There's four boys and three girls. And you could call me anything, just not late for dinner.
Well, you know, what confused me is Bob wasn't here.
I was just teasing you.
Bob wasn't here last time.
Yeah.
And so his name is not at the bottom of the script. It just says, Fred and Greg, welcome back to the show. And so I kept thinking for a second, oh, God, well, Bob's not here again. But there he is.
I'm sitting right next to you here.
So that's right. That's you. Yeah. You're the one with a hairline like mine. What's going on over at the Landis Arboretum?
You know, we got a lot of things rolling right now. The concert series is in full bloom, if you want to think of it that way. And, you know, the website is probably our best marketing tool, so just visit landisarboretum.org. The complete calendar of events is posted. And if you're a Facebook person, find us and like us on Facebook, because there's a lot of day-to-day things that will pop up on there, including, like, what's in bloom. We've installed some critter cams around the arboretum.
Critter cams?
And little trail cams in various areas where we see some activity. And, you know, it actually has been working really, really well because the arboretum is sort of a nature preserve we got bobcat.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, we got some owls coming in and actually in-action video.
Oh, great.
The activity, fishers, you know, coyotes, we got all kinds of, you know.
Barred owl.
Yeah. Yep.
Is there any video that you have to delete for fear of frightening the patrons?
Not yet.
Bigfoot.
Not yet.
Good.
But we're still looking.
All right. And Bob Graves, what's happening at your shack?
Well, it's still a great time to be getting some flowering plants for that party of 4th of July or delayed graduation or wedding that you got coming up. There's lots of beautiful flowering things still available. And don't think because it's almost July that you can't get something that's really pretty at this point.
Fadigans. Okay. And what's your website?
www.fatigans.com.
All right, so the email address here is voxpopwamc.org, and let's blast through a couple of emails before we get back to the phones. This one came in from Lee in Modena. We have a golden rain tree, which, what's that, Donald Trump thing? We have a golden rain tree, which this season has been particularly spectacular. It has a sucker growing smack up against the main trunk, and even though only 5 feet tall, it too has been blooming. I'm just wondering if this new sprout will have any negative impact on the tree. And that's from Lee.
Yeah, you will want to take the sucker off because it should be maintained as a single trunk plant. The golden rain tree is a really cool tree, and it's, you know, it puts out yellow flowers and pretty much at a time when not much else is blooming.
Yeah.
And very few things that have that kind of true yellow flower in the landscape.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of them around.
I was going to ask, do you have one at the Arboretum?
We actually have had a few over the years, but
how are they doing?
Never the best because we're a little bit marginal in our zone for that tree.
It's a little cold.
I mean, the trees will live for a while, but we've never had good bloom on them. Although
Medina?
We've had really good luck with pawpaw.
Medina?
So certainly a warmer zone, but either way, long story short, the sucker should come off. It should be maintained as a single trunk plant. And if they have any questions on pruning, the International Society of Arboriculture put out a consumer-based information site, free. It's research-based info, not opinions, and it's treesaregood.com.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that's an opinion, though. Right. Trees are good is an opinion.
Well, I don't think it is.
Don't get him started.
I don't think it is.
Trying to start an argument here. This one's from George. This one's from George. How can I get rid of the coddling moths in my Empire apple tree?
Well, they say there's no such thing as an organic apple. Someone could probably tell us later. There might be. What we would generally recommend is a regular program of pest control. That would be an insecticide and fungicide combination on a 10-14-day schedule. And if that was followed, then the moth should not be an issue.
Okay. Yeah. This one's from Heather. Are you familiar with the Hoya plant? I recently acquired two through cuttings, rooting, and then potting them. Where is the best place in my home for them to flourish, and can I keep them outside this time of year?
You want to put those in the brightest spot you have. They're a succulent. They're not a cactus, but they're in that succulent family. You can put them outside. I would recommend in the summertime that you don't put them out in the bright sun because they're not used to it. You can put them out in some shade, gradually move them into the sun. But inside in the wintertime, they need to be in the brightest spot you got.
Okay, fair enough. And this one is from Ron, and then we'll get back to the phones. Ron writes, I have a eucalyptus garden bench that I purchased about 4 years ago. It's outside year-round. I have not sealed it or cleaned it. It has picked up what appears to be lichen over most of it. There's also a large old oak tree nearby with lichen. Is there a proper way to remove lichen from the garden bench? Is lichen any problem for the large old oak tree? And that's from Ron in West Stockbridge.
Yeah, well, the answer with the oak tree part of it is that the lichen does not do any damage whatsoever. A lot of people will see lichen on trees and think, and sometimes those trees are in decline. Sometimes they're doing really good. But if you see a tree in decline and it's got a lot of lichen on it, a lot of times people will say, well, this fungus is killing my plant.
Yeah.
And then when you see it, it's like, oh, no, it's nothing to do with that.
It's like a red herring when you see people come in and say, oh, this is killing my plant, and it's not. Something else is.
Something else is. Yep, and a lot of times on a stressed-out tree, you'll see sometimes more lichen, which makes people think that that's the cause because there's more light getting in there because there's less leaves. Therefore, the lichen tends to...
In terms of the bench, so, I think you just scrub it. Right?
That's what I was going to say. It's just something that wouldn't hurt the wood.
It's not probably hurting the bench either.
No,
anyway.
It grows on rocks and fence posts.
Yep. Right. They say it's a sign of good air quality.
Well,
you see
you
it
go.
Up at altitude, like in the Adirondacks, at high peaks. You see
lichen
it all over.
Is a fungus and an algae.
Algae
combination. They can't live without each other, and they don't actually. And they create the algae creates energy from the sun. The lichen is absorbing moisture and maybe some trace elements from that moisture, and they get together.
Neat. Symbiotic relationship.
Symbiotic.
Nice. All right. Bob Graves is here, Fred Breglia and Greg Ward, and you at 800-348-2551. Bonnie in Esperance. Bonnie, you're on.
Hi, Fred. I know you.
Hello.
I don't know the other gentleman. Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to know if diatomaceous earth would have any effect on the tick population if I sprinkled it out amongst my plants and things, if it would help cut down on the ticks. And I also want to know if you have a booklet or anything like that at the Arboretum that would give sketches or photos of all the native plants in this area.
We do have actually a booklet for native plants, and you can pick that up right in that welcome center of the Arboretum. You come right to the farmhouse, the little welcome center, uh-huh. and there's a couple of different books. One of them is native plants. The other one's on ferns. And okay. there's a suggested donation. There's an amount there, but you could just take the book and put the money in the donation box, and you're good to go there. We also have lots of fact sheets on ticks and the different stages of ticks, including the little nymphs, mm-hmm. deer tick nymphs, and the size and actual, you know, sort of a card that shows you the actual size. And some of these things are really small.
Yeah.
They're really yeah. scary. As far as diatomaceous earth, and I do use that to control an incredible amount of pests, I've never heard it having a great control on ticks. Now, maybe these other gentlemen might know more about that.
We do offer a bag that is diatomaceous earth, usually used as a dust on the foliage of edibles or other ornamentals you want to protect from plants or from bugs that are actually uh-huh. eating the foliage. And you can't,
yeah.
it's also used as a sort of a barrier for slugs on the ground. But how mm-hmm. you would apply that broadly.
It's hard to apply that in a yeah. wide enough area.
I don't know. See how that
there,
would work.
There is an organic insect control, or several, that are basically oils that are, again, uh-huh. it's very safe. It doesn't last as long as your chemical controls. And the thing that you want to remember with ticks, too, is that's a health hazard. If you really have a problem, this is something where you want to yeah. you want to take care of it.
All right, Bonnie, thank yeah. you very much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Lawrence in Western Mass. Hello, Lawrence. You're on.
Oh, hey. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I have a problem with a blight on my fruit trees. I first noticed on a plum tree. I have some beautiful Shiloh plum trees, and they appear to be dead at this point. There's some kind of black blight on the all the branches. It's covered the tree completely, and it appears to have spread to one of my peach trees.
Yep.
Yep.
What can you do about that?
Well, it's not really a blight, even though it sort of acts that way. It is a fungus, though, in that sense. So you're correct there, and it's deadly. The disease is called black knot because it looks like a black knot on your branch. And the plums are probably the one species of tree, I got to think, that's hit the hardest with black knot. Cherries will get it.
Any of the stone fruits.
Yeah, any of the stone fruits.
Peaches seem to be, I never
so
have
bad.
Seen it
they don't
on
seem
a peach,
too bad.
So that
no,
would be interesting.
No, but the plums are hard, you know, really bad. The cherries, really bad. And you typically, the control for that is you prune out the black knots as soon as you see them. And you prune it beyond the black knot, so you don't actually cut into the black knot. You're cutting below into healthy wood, and you're literally burning those branches, or you know, not composting them, getting them off site. It's definitely easy to spread from one tree to another. So if the trees look mostly dead at this point, there's no way we're getting those back. So now it's a matter of just removal, because they're basically just sitting there with a ton of inoculum that can
there's
get
probably
to the
some wild stuff in the area that's carrying it.
That's my guess.
And you may have trouble over time growing those particular types yep. of trees without a routine fungicide.
And what's the safest way to dispose of it?
You know, typically I throw it on a burn pile and we burn it when you see black knot. You could certainly, you know, throw it away as opposed to composting. You know, I wouldn't
just get it out of wherever you are.
Yeah, and you don't really want to get it to your neighbors either. So, you know, to me, when I see that kind of a thing,
yeah.
you know, we have a burn pile out back, and that kind of a thing is a great burn pile thing. It's
what we found is that it's pretty specific on fruiting trees to yeah. plums, that even the fruiting cherries, the sour cherries, the sweet cherries are pretty resistant to it, and as well as the peaches. So it is specific to plums, and if your plums are already done, dead, that is, removing the plums and just not planting plums again should be a good approach.
Okay, yeah. Lawrence, we thank you for that. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show, and we go to Nancy in Potsdam. Hi, Nancy, you're on. Hey, Nancy, can you turn your radio down a little bit? Oh, boy. Nancy's calling from Potsdam, so we want to give her a chance here. Nancy. All right, call back, Nancy, and we'll let you back on. You're calling from so far away. Let's go to Cynthia in Plattekill. Cynthia, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is, are there any good plant identification apps out there? Like, I'm a one-person landscaping business, and I'll get into someone's garden, and there'll be, you know, a dozen plants that they don't know what there are, and I'll know what 11 of them are, but I won't know the 12th one. So I'm just wondering if there's a good app to help
there
me out
must
in that
be.
Regard.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of apps, but I would have to say that I don't know anyone who has one that is working well. That's still the at the moment the best app is to cut a big piece of that off and go to your local garden center.
There is,
that's been my experience so far as well.
There's one called Leaf Snap where you can take a picture of it, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
So it identifies it?
To identify the leaf and it matches it.
There's GoBotany is a native plant, all plants, I think. I know all herbaceous plants. Anyway, GoBotany is a website and it has an application, I think even or soon will that allows and you to look them
there's,
up.
There's a couple really good books. It's a Michael Durr's book on woody plants,
yeah,
sort of the Bible. And what's the fellow's name with perennials?
Alan Armitage.
Armitage, yep. Alan Armitage.
Yeah, that's another great one. But one more idea, too, is with Facebook and Facebook groups, there are some of these Identify My Tree or Tree ID 101. There's a million different groups out there right now. And when you look for the ones with the high numbers, they're big groups. And anytime that I have put a plant on there, I mean, these people are aggressive. They want to be the first to answer. It has taken me minutes sometimes to ID. It's quicker than any app, and you're getting a lot of experts on there, and they just want to, just like everybody else, they really want to get their answer out. It's competitive. They want to be the first ones. So look for those Facebook groups and a really good way to get some accurate ID and relatively quickly.
All right. Cynthia, thank you so much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves, and I got them all right this time. Let's go over to line two, and Kathleen in Summers, Connecticut. I'm sorry, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to preface this by saying I'm a very, very, very beginner gardener. I just moved to Summers, and I consider that the country, so my question might be a little rudimentary, but I really appreciate your show. I'm learning a lot. So my question is, my son and I just started a little flower bed with a few herbs that are really easy to grow and some very basic flowers. And we planted everything, and I'm realizing now that the soil is probably not hardy enough or fertilized enough. And I was just wondering what your suggestion was to supplement now that the plants are already in the ground. I don't want to use like a topical chemical one, but if you have anything organic to recommend, that would be great.
Yeah. You know, the first thing I always tell people when they're starting out in new gardens is to get a soil test. And you could go, at least in New York, you can take your soil sample to like a Cornell Cooperative Extension. And they could test it there for pH, but I typically will tell people to, have them send it out to Cornell University. And I got to think there's another university in your area that does that kind of a thing. But they'll give you a complete fertility test. You tell them what you want to grow. They'll tell you how to adjust it. And, because what works in one site, we can give you general recommendations. It doesn't always work in another site, because if the pH is low, then you might want to not make sure you don't use anything that contains sulfur. But if the pH is too high, then you would want to use fertilizers that have sulfur to lower that pH. And you really want that pH to be kind of a 6.8, more or less. 6.5 to 7.0 is perfect for most plants, unless you're doing more acidic plants, in which case that would change. So a soil test is a great way to start. And there's a lot of great organic fertilizers out there. Once you know what your pH is and what you're trying to grow, that would work really, really well. Organic stuff all the time.
That said, like the an application of an organic fertilizer, Espoma products, thing called Plant Tone or Flower Tone, organically based things, an application after you've planted today, worked in around the soil, following the bag's recommendation of about 5 pounds per 100 square feet as the rule, will probably make a difference.
Yep. And one little tip, sometimes when you put that around a plant, especially in the middle of summer like now, I find that animals sometimes will dig up that Espoma, even though it is probably one of my favorite products as well. That whole line is really good. But be aware that something could dig into that, and because they're going after the sort of stinky fertilizer. Skunks do it and things like that.
Kathleen, thanks a lot for the call. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. Talia in Albany, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about pumpkins. So I had a pumpkin that was growing, and my mother said, it's going to take over your whole garden. You need to move it. And I said, no, it'll be fine. And now, of course, it's taken over my entire garden, and can I cut it? Can I stake it? How do I keep it?
You can, well, you know what I always do, because that happens to me every time my squash get too bigger than I thought they would, even though I've done this now for years, is you can direct it. The first thing you can do is that it's heading in one direction. You know, it might branch a little, but you can sort of take that leader and push it off in one direction or another. If it's in an open area and you have lawn, let it go out into the lawn and just mow around it and let it head in that direction so it's not bothering your tomato or your peppers or whatever it is.
So awesome.
That's the easiest thing to do. If you want to build a structure and send it up a fence that's going to hold a pumpkin, you know, it should be pretty sturdy, you can do that too. But just redirect it out into the open space you might have nearby.
And Talia, what lesson have you learned?
That my mother's always right.
Exactly. Well, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Fred, Greg, Bob here. You as well. We'll be back.
Support comes from the Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies and performance, newpaltz.edu/THETRE. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zanka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY Eyewear Albany.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, celebrating Francis Day, a community open house with tours, art making, music, and more. Saturday, July 15th, noon to 4 p.m., skidmore.edu/tang for details. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans. Hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons. GrapesandGrainsWine.com. And Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement at educational seminars across Central New York. Say no to kneepain.com for dates and locations.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, The Gardening Show with Ray Graff and Fred Breglia and Bob Graves and Greg Ward and you at 800-348-2551 or via email at voxpopwamc.org. We have a stack of emails here, so let's do a few. I don't know how many more we'll get to after this. This is from Christine. Recently, voles have destroyed my PJ hydrangea. How do I get rid of these pests? I've tried the time-released castor oil pellets, but they're still present.
Yep. Well, you know, mouse traps actually work pretty good for voles. You just use a little bit of peanut butter just like you would a mouse. And the only thing I would recommend for people is if you're putting these outside where other critters could get into them, I typically use like a piece of something that would cover it, whatever that's going to be.
Upside down pod.
I was going to say,
can.
Yeah, that you cut in half and you kind of make so it's like a half of a container.
And they'll come up inside.
Put it right over it. They'll go right inside there. And then you don't have to worry about other little critters getting nailed. Cats do really, really well if you have, especially outdoor cats, they decimate voles. And then we also do things protectively. Typically, voles don't do a lot of eating on woody plants this time of year. It's mostly winter damage.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fall, we'll put on little guards of like hardware cloth collars around trees that are prone, especially young plants.
Right.
And,
Cornell actually recommends putting out bait boxes in October.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I will say, recently a customer of mine picked up a couple of Havahart traps. Now, for a vole, these must be very small.
Wow.
And that they're very effective. If you have a Havahart trap, you don't actually have to cover them because who's going to run in there besides a vole or a field mouse?
Right.
Yeah. And you can sort them out.
Okay.
So I just wanted to mention
that. But then
what
do you do with the vole?
Yeah, that's the problem.
You're not supposed to take it anywhere.
Right. So if you have a heart and you're not killing the vole, will you let the vole out and say, we'll see you next time?
I just was going to stop right there. I said, you're not supposed to take it anywhere.
Okay. Message delivered, old boy. Well done. Greg Ward at Ward's Nursery. This is from John. We have a big, beautiful beech tree in our yard that has developed a fungus over one side of the tree. It's white and brown fungus that looks like several flay slugs pressed into the bark. In the area of the fungus, the bark has also peeled away from the tree. Question one, will this kill the tree? Question two, what can we do? And that's from John.
It sounds like he's got beech bark disease if he's talking fungus and bark splitting and peeling away. Now, that disease is really, really devastating on the American beaches.
Did he say beech? I missed that.
The beautiful beech tree.
Yep. So I tend to think that's maybe an American beech, and it's getting attacked by the beech bark disease, which is almost always fatal. But it may not be that. It may not even be the fungus which is causing it, because it might be a European beech, which is way more common in landscapes. And the European beech is not prone to the beech bark disease that our American beaches suffer from.
But they do get some.
Well, they have other things. Exactly. Yep. There are some bleeding cankers that can get in there.
Might want to get a consult on that one.
But it might not be the bad one. It might be something that can be fixed.
Best to get a professional opinion. This one's from Diana. I was interested in the caller who says her magnolia tree is not blooming this year. I've noticed that none of the magnolia trees in my Albany neighborhood have bloomed this year. All are well-established and healthy-looking trees with plenty of sun. Any ideas? Is this a bad year for the magnolia? And how will the lack of blooms affect its future health?
Did you have a frost?
Yeah, well, what we had was really warm weather in February, right, and then it got cold again. And some of these flowering things, the buds swell up. They think it's spring. They start to get ready. It gets cold again, and it doesn't kill the tree, but it kills the bud.
Yeah.
So it won't hurt it long term.
We made it. We thought a lot of that was going to happen. We only saw it on witch hazel, which was pretty odd.
Oh, wow.
But the magnolias all seemed to actually make it through and bloomed well. But
it's
very spotty.
Yeah, this past year.
We had a little spotty of that around our area.
But it's weather.
It's weather related and absolutely not going to hurt the long-term survivability of that tree.
All right, and this final email here is from Karen. Hello, I have a crabapple tree that starts losing its leaves in early June. The leaves, which are naturally purplish, turn spotty with a yellow color, and they develop little discolored spots like cankers, even the leaves that don't fall off the tree. Yep. Is this tree just too old? Is there something with which to treat it? Should I feed it something? And that's from Karen.
Well, the disease that's doing that is called apple scab, and very common crab apples. Apples get that. Some varieties get it worse than others.
It's really a varietal thing. We found years ago the varieties that we had got it much worse than the ones.
Yeah, a lot of the resistant varieties nowadays are, you get a little bit of it, but not bad.
Can it be cured?
You can treat
it.
It can be sprayed. That would certainly
the most common one.
It can be injected.
Yeah, out there was this crabapple, beautiful pink tree called Radiant. Yep. And it's a gorgeous tree. It does make a big fruit. The fruit drops. So that was a problem. But it consistently drops those leaves right about now and just keeps going.
But
however, it goes through.
Every year it comes back.
Yeah.
It doesn't kill it. Yeah. It just looks like the devil in the summertime.
It had enough time to put in.
Yep. Yeah.
And the good thing about that is that the time it starts to really defoliate is kind of an end of the summertime when it really starts to drop leaves. And that's kind of when leaves are starting to drop anyways. Mm. So that's why it's not a life-threatening thing. But there is a cultural control that you can do to reduce the amount of inoculum. And that is if you're persistent and you get those leaves up as they continue to drop, maybe a mower with a bagger. Don't just mow them up, because all those little spores for next year's infection are laying on those leaves. So if you get them up, and it's not like you get them up this year and you're not going to have anything next year, you need to kind of do it 2 or 3 years in a row. But if you do that, you'll get less. It will not be a cure-all.
All right, let's go to Jeremy in Chatham. Jeremy, you're on.
Okay, so my question is, what's eating my peas? I have to tell you that the garden is inside a deer fence. There's pea stone around the perimeter, so nothing is getting under that, and they're in 16-inch raised beds, but they're eating the tops off about a foot up the plant, and I have like six double rows, and almost all of them are now eaten. Not up, but the tops are gone.
That's a mystery.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know, there's no insect that would, like a caterpillar or anything that really affects peas. So I can't imagine it's any insect. I would still think it's some kind of mammal.
Squirrel, probably.
And so squirrel,
that's what I was
going to
say. Maybe a squirrel.
And possibly.
Well, I would have thought of that, but even a squirrel, I don't know how it would get in there.
It'd climb right up.
I suppose.
You need one of Fred's webcam.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Put a critter cam out.
Get a camera and then take a look in the morning. You'll find out.
Yep. And those trail cams now are very inexpensive. I mean, compared to what they used to be.
A squirrel can climb right up a vertical wall.
Yeah, they're.
You can't keep him out of anything.
I was thinking, and I might still do this. I don't know what I'd do if I caught it, but I have some ice and water shield left over. I thought about peeling the back off and sticking it up, sticky side up in the garden, sort of like fly paper.
And, well, that doesn't sound all that humane. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
It's a glue trap of a
what
different
would I do
sort.
With the thing if it got stuck.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll offer one more thing. I've been trying to figure this out. It's ruining me. Oh, my God.
What about tenting them with a little floating rope cover? You know, the Rime material often discourages most everyone.
I thought about that because online someplace, somebody said they had this problem for years, and they saw a flock of birds. Now, that seems implausible to me, but... You know, and I've never seen any birds in the garden doing that near it, but...
They're not usually eating just foliage. They're eating seeds.
You might need one of those critter cams.
Yeah. You got to get a critter cam. Hey, Jeremy, good luck with that. I love a good mystery, so let us know on a future program if there is one. Susan in Ankrum, New York. Susan, you're on.
Hi. I have a hibiscus plant, a coral red hibiscus, that I've had for about 15 to 20 years. It's been in the same pot, and I recently moved it within the last year. I moved it from one window to another, but it's got the same exposure, and I am getting leaf drop. The leaves get white spots or patches, and then they yellow-brown drop off. But I'm getting very healthy-looking new growth, some of which is also dropping off. And I'm wondering what to do with this poor thing.
So this is a tropical hibiscus. You keep it in a container in your house, in a pot in your house, and you moved it. So moving the plant can certainly cause some leaf drop. Longer, sunnier, warmer weather. So the days have gotten longer. The weather, we had some nice warm days. That can make a difference in how much moisture the plant is moving, especially if it's been in the same pot for a while. Ooh. So that it's well rooted and needing more frequent watering. That will
usually
dry,
when you see yellow leaves like that, it's gotten dry. Yeah. Is most common.
The white marks are not something that I can think about identifying. But if you wanted to either send some photos to to the email at our website, or you're not too far there, Ankrum. If you wanted to, bring in some of those leaves or a piece of that plant, we can take a look at it.
What is the email address, Greg?
So the email is info@wardsnursery.com, I believe.
You don't sound entirely positive.
I am not. So I would go to the website, wardsnursery.com, and then hit the Contact Us link.
Okay.
That would be safe.
Susan, good luck. Thank you very much. Go to Ricky in Millbrook. Ricky, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Very quick question.
Sure.
Last summer in August, we put in 5 hydrangea bushes, very healthy, beautiful looking, followed all the rules. The winter came, the winter went, and every day I have been running out to see my buds. I have not one bud on 5 hydrangea bushes.
And,
what is the problem?
When you say no buds, you're talking about these things are bare and no leaves?
I have plenty of leaves, beautiful green,
no
healthy
buds.
Leaves.
Yeah.
And so
no
what,
flower
what
buds.
What kind of hydrangea are they?
I don't know. It's white.
They're supposed to be
white. They're
white,
and they're. I don't think they're a very special rendition of a hydrangea. They look very average. They're rather on the short side, and they're wide, and because they're against the fence, but they get beautiful sun. In fact, they were eaten last year by the deer, but I have been very conscientious in spraying them.
And you don't remember the variety name of them? No tag on there?
You know what? I really don't remember what we put in. I just, I don't.
But they're,
I did
they're
call,
white. They're not pink or blue.
Yeah,
they're
but
white.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
And I called the gardener that put them in, and she said they'll bloom in August.
Oh.
So I said, well, that'll be great, but I don't see one bud on there at all.
That identifies it. You're all set.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to worry about a thing.
Really?
Really?
They're going to bloom.
Yeah, these are panicle hydrangeas. If your gardener is correct, they bloom in August, and they would not have a bud on them yet. But in about 2 weeks, you might start to, if you squeeze the tip, you might start to feel a little bud in there, and about 3 weeks from now, you'll actually start to see it.
They're wow. very hard. Oh, very hard.
Very really cool. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Ricky. We appreciate it. Satisfied customer. That's a rarity. Let's go to David in Lenox. David, you're on.
Yes, thank you. I love this program. I'm having a little trouble deciding who's going to get my potatoes, the voles or me. And I do the lazy man. I do the lazy man's style, and I've had great luck over the years. Put about a foot of straw on top of them. So I either need a remedy or a good recipe for vole soup, something to solve my problem.
Well, that sounds like a Fred Breglia situation.
Yeah, I don't go there with those voles.
No.
I think your mousetrap idea is probably the best bet. Just get some mousetraps, put them out all around. Make sure you cover them so other critters, like we talked about, don't get into them.
How do you cover them so that the voles can get in?
Well, they call it the lazy man's method. I put the potato in the ground about an inch into the soil. As soon as it sprouts through the soil, I cover it with about an inch of a well-rotted straw.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds
fine. I've had
fine.
Great luck with potatoes. Very easy, because I'm talking about an area that's
it's just easy digging for the voles.
Yeah, now you've made a vole condominium.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of times those voles love that straw, too, because they can move around under the straw without, critters seeing them, like birds and hawks and owls. They kind of have free reign. They love mulch like that exact same way.
But what Fred was saying was use a mousetrap and then take a big pot or a garbage can upside down so that they can come up inside it and another animal can't get to it.
So they go under the ground.
They'll tunnel in.
You put it by a known entrance, right, like a little hole that you see in the ground. So that's what you have to find first. Where are they coming from? If they're living with your potatoes, that could be a problem.
Yeah. They don't have to
come
they're out.
Living in it because there's a network of tunnels that's substantial.
Yeah, I would look for some of those holes, though, and start to selectively put some mouse traps with peanut butter near those holes. Tend to think you'd start to see the population come down.
So the vole soup is out of the question?
I wouldn't go with the vole soup.
Okay. I was just wondering if you wanted to do be a little less lazy, if you could, still not too late, remove all the straw and then bring in some compost that's thicker, more soil-like, and bury your potatoes and see if that doesn't discourage them.
All right, let's see here. Who's been waiting the longest? Very quickly, let's go over to Mishka and Niskayuna. Mishka, you're on.
Hi, great. I just have a quick question that's sort of too late in the season. Last year, I had lupins that grew like crazy. I must have had 10 plants and 50 spikes. This year, two tiny little leaves and no plants whatsoever. The only thing that I question in terms of what might have happened is they were flowering out like crazy in November.
Yeah, it's certainly possible the late warm weather of fall or early winter has been causing problems with some things. So all those flowers last year made seed heads, and all those seeds could be germinating now. And so though you have lost the crop of bloom for this year, you very well may have lots of little seedlings starting to emerge, and you want to coax those and have those for next year.
How do I coax them?
Well, you look for them first, see if they're there. If they're there, then you would sort of cultivate around them, make sure they don't have too much competition. You may want to even spread them out if they're all in one spot, because that is your new crop. They are biennial. The mother plants do eventually give in.
Yeah.
Yep, they do eventually give in. Usually you get a few years out of them, but after a while they do fail, and at that point you should have seedlings coming up that will sort of take their place.
So be patient.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Now, we only have about 30 seconds here for Marilyn in Woodstock. Marilyn, you only have a few seconds to pose this question, and we'll try to answer it very quickly.
Yes. My question was, the little yellow flowers growing now on all the highways and byways everywhere, I tried to trace it last year.
Okay. So are they native is what you
want? And the cooperative told me it was dwarf cinquefoil.
Okay.
And I've been trying to find, you know, seeds for it because I would like it in my lawn or in garden.
Well, we're just about out of time, so let's see if
I've
you can find
those. Lady Bird Garden Center, but I thought maybe there was something in New York that would be more for wildflowers.
Right, we're out of time.
Because it's everywhere now.
All right, so what do you think, guys, very quickly?
If you haven't searched the internet, that's the place to go first.
Internet, okay.
Agreed, yeah.
A perennial plant called Potentilla, very similar.
All right, well, listen, that was fun, and relatively so. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward, thanks for being here on The Gardening Show. Support comes from Adams Fair Acre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Trees, shrubs, blooming perennials, Adams-grown annuals, and bedding plants. Gardening supplies and advice, adamsfarms.com. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Curtis Lumber announcing their new kitchen showrooms, featuring kitchen design trends and cabinets from Wellborn and Merillat and quartz countertops from Cambria, CurtisLumber.com. And Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, offering annuals, perennials, vegetables, trees, and shrubs, indoor and outdoor plants, and information for landscapes and gardens, HadleyGardenCenter.com. Thanks again to Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward for being here. Thanks to you for listening and for all the great calls and emails today. Zach Malloy is our engineer. Phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. We talk coffee and tea on Food Friday tomorrow at 2. Right now, though, stand by for news.